Everybody must be accorded his full political right.
Please be advised that this podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only.
Hi there, my name is Larry Kwiradai, and this is Mugabe and Me. Welcome to the first of a two-part finale in the Mugabe and Me limited series. This is a podcast about how I related with the late Robert Gabriel Mugabe, you know, the former president of Zimbabwe. It is not necessarily about litigating who he was, for better or worse. This is how I saw Mugabe from the 36 years of my life in which he ruled. In the first episode, I introduced us to Mugabe, taking us through his early life right until the elections of 1980. In the second, I explored Mugabe's governance through the lens of his early successes with health and education, then the land issue and the economy in general. In this first installment of the final episode, I look at how he treated his adversaries. We peel back the layers of Mugabe's years at the helm, a time when enemies were no longer just colonial powers or liberation rivals, but sometimes from within his own house. It is three key battlegrounds: opposition politics, foreign policy, and internal division. So join me as I continue to unravel the life and legacy of Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
There will never be a regime change here. There will always be the people of Zimbabwe in control.
Opposition in Zimbabwe did not begin with the Movement for Democratic Change, or the MDC. It was at the very birth of the nation. Let's rewind to 1980. It is Zimbabwe's first democratic election after the Liberation War. Mugabe ZANU-PF wins by landslide, but that win is contested. Joseph Nkomo ZAPU, strong in Matabeleland and the Midlands, alleges intimidation and voter rigging. The end. Or is it? What followed was one of the darkest chapters in Zimbabwe's history: the Gukurahundi. From 1983 to 1987, villages were burned, mass graves dug, women raped, and survivors silenced, according to the Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace in Zimbabwe, the CCJP. To this day, that time has not been reconciled. Mugabe himself called it a moment of madness. He and Nkomo were probably the best placed to settle it, but that is what happened when they were alive. They really never confronted it with us. But given it's still within our lifetime, there is still a lot of opportunity for that legacy to be closed properly. But in 1987, Nkomo and Mugabe signed the Unity Accord, merging ZAPU into ZANU-PF. Some called it peace, others called it a sellout. Ultimately, both were advocates for a one-party state. But I am talking about Mugabe here, not Nkomo. However, the opposition wouldn't die easily. By 1990, Edgar Tekere, Mugabe's former ally, had broken ranks and formed the Zimbabwe Unity Movement, or ZUM. Then he ran as president against Mugabe. Note, this is not just an ally. This is a man who said he would kill in defense of Mugabe when he was prime minister. He had served in government as a minister, but when Mugabe voiced his belief that Zimbabwe would be better governed as a one-party state, Tekere strongly disagreed, saying, and I quote, "A one-party state was never one of the founding principles of ZANU-PF, and experience in Africa has shown that it brought the evils of nepotism and corruption and inefficiency," end quote. Tekere was expelled in 1988. He campaigned on anti-corruption, multi-party democracy, and constitutional reform. ZUM lost badly, and Mugabe pressed ahead with his plans for a one-party state. Just a quick note, according to politician Douglas Monzora and future presidential candidate himself, a lot of that disaffection with Mugabe in the 1980s was the lack of access to higher-level quality in terms of white-collar jobs. So we're talking about lawyers and the like. This, he says, was because a lot of students were being produced by the UZ, well, as graduates, but there was a ceiling in as far as how far they could go. This resulted in an educated class which felt disenfranchised. He would form part of that and become a future opposition leader. So by the time the MDC emerged in the late 1990s, the stage had already been set. Opposition in Zimbabwe had always come at a heavy cost, and Mugabe had made it clear power was not to be shared. By the late 1990s, the honeymoon was over. In the second episode, we went into the challenges of that period. The Zimbabweans were growing restless, the economy was faltering, unemployment rising, and corruption was no longer whispered about. It was in the headlines. Cue the rise of the new political force, the Movement for Democratic Change. Led by the former trade unionist Morgan Tsvangirai, the MDC gave voice to millions who felt sidelined by the liberation war narrative. In the year 2000, Mugabe suffered a rare blow when Zimbabweans rejected his proposed new constitution in a national referendum. It was a shock, and it marked a shift. From that point, Mugabe began relying more on coercion than consensus. In the violent and chaotic 2008 elections, Tsvangirai actually won the first round. He pulled out of the runoff, leaving Mugabe to win unopposed. What followed was the global political agreement. It forced Mugabe to do the one thing he did not want to do, share power. Mugabe was installed as president and Tsvangirai as prime minister. Mugabe, still keen to show who was boss, would now be officially called in state broadcast, and I quote, "the head of state and government and commander-in-chief of the defense forces." Yep, like, you know, if you watch the Boondocks, a pimp Nate Slickback, the whole thing all the time when they introduced him. By year 2013, there was a new constitution and the opposition had largely been neutered. He won an election, disputed again, and then boom, the opposition came from within. But that's for later.
Rest with the states of the regions themselves. And here, Mr. Prime Minister, you have taken a leading and constructive role. I know that you'll be meeting with a number of leaders in all walks of American life during your stay here in Washington and elsewhere in our land. I'm sure they will benefit, as I have, from your thoughtful views on our bilateral relationship as well as on regional and global issues. I'm delighted that you accepted our invitation to visit Washington, and I look forward to meeting you again.
Once upon a time, Mugabe walked in the halls of the Commonwealth with ease. He was even honored by the late Queen Elizabeth II in 1994. She would revoke it later when the two countries lost love for each other. But by the early 2000s, he had become something of a global pariah, at least in the Western world. The turning point, the land reform. When Mugabe's government began seizing white-owned farms without compensation, the international community, particularly Britain, cried foul.
Having and bearing sanctions banning us from Europe, we are not Europeans. We have not asked for any inch of Europe, any square inch of that territory. So, Blair, keep your England and let me keep my Zimbabwe.
That was Mugabe at the 2002 Earth Summit in Johannesburg. The UK imposed sanctions, the EU followed suit, and of course, the Americans. They're not ones to miss out on a party, are they? In response, Mugabe pivoted, and hard, to the east. China, Libya, Iran became Zimbabwe's new friends. This Look East policy, launched in 2003, sought investment, trade, and political cover. It is worth noting that some sources trace the policy's origins to an earlier period, stating that the Zimbabwe Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced this foreign policy posture in 1992, anticipating more trade and investment from the emerging eastern markets. In the dissertation and examination of Mugabe's Look East policy, 2003 to 2017, An Afrocentric Perspective, Dominic Mapaka writes, and I quote, Ndlovu Gacheni, 2010, traces the policy to 1992 when the ZANU-PF integrated economic aspects into its foreign policy based on the Lukist posture. A gravitation to the East was driven by an anticipation that future trade, investments and joint ventures and tourists would emerge from the East. At that time, China was emerging as a potential global power that could counter the dominance of the USA and its Western allies. Additionally, Zimbabwe also wanted to form ties with countries such as Malaysia, India, Pakistan, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, and Iran. End quote. Mugabe viewed formerly colonized Asian countries as successful examples of economic growth that had once been at similar levels to African countries. He believed Zimbabwe could learn from the economic development models and their struggles against colonialism. This was part of his vision to transition from being solely a political liberator to an economic liberator. Despite his earlier conceptualization, the period of active implementation as a response to eager Western economic and political pressures is consistently cited as starting in 2003. Within the continent, he had a few tiffs, famously with the former Botswana president, Ian Khama. Khama was a fierce critic of Mugabe, a departure from everyone else in SADC who tended not to criticize the old man. SADC, by the way, is the bloc for the Southern African nations. Well, they didn't criticize him. You'd think it might have happened privately, but not publicly. It didn't help that Khama was close to Mugabe's adversary, Morgan Tsvangirai, and when he got into power, he declared the time for quiet diplomacy. You see, quiet diplomacy was a thing that was done by the former South Africa president, Thabo Mbeki, in which the diplomacy would happen behind the closed doors, not too much pressure in public, and that sort of thing. Well, Khama didn't fancy that much. Mugabe would make fun of Khama, including the fact that he was not married. Their relationship was frosty and tense. Mugabe never visited Botswana on a state visit while Khama was in power, something he tended to do. I mean, this man really loved to travel. Adversarial to the end, Khama was among the first to ask Mugabe to quit during the events of November 2017. Then there were the UN speeches, many of which became the craze among Africans, mainly outside Zimbabwe.
We equally reject attempts to prescribe new rights that are contrary to our values, norms, traditions and beliefs. We are not gay.
Every year, he would go to the institution and rail against the sanctions on Zimbabwe, Cuba, any occupation across the world, particularly targeting Western aggressors, and call for the reform of the United Nations, among others. ZANU-PF was never really a monolith, was it? But, you know, by the 2010s, the cracks were wide open. Now, if we talk about word association and you asked a Zimbabwean the word factions, only one party would come to mind, and that would be ZANU-PF. They really use that, folks, along with demonizing machinations, sovereignty, pronounced for sovereignty. No, not a jab, by the way, it's just the way they said it. But I digress. Over periods, Mugabe often dealt with discord by expulsion or reassignment. There were allegations of other darker methods, none of which have been proven, so the less we say about that, the better. From the outside, you almost feel as if he enjoyed having people with competing interests play against each other. But there was the public-facing drama. In 2014, Mugabe sacked Joyce Mujuru, his longtime vice president and liberation comrade. She was accused of plotting a coup. In 2017, Mugabe did the same to Mnangagwa, a move that backfired spectacularly. Within weeks, military tanks rolled into Harare, and the rest, as they say, is history. Even then, everyone remembers that night. I mean, do you remember it? That night when Mugabe came out and he was sitting with the generals and he gave a speech and people thought he was going to quit?
Reminding ourselves of our wartime mantra. Iweneni tinebasa. I thank you and good night. Sorry. One or two places. Nambonjengama.
I hope we can correct that. It's a long speech. Katenda. Asante sana. Siyabonga.
That was a signature Mugabe move. Mugabe wanted things on his own terms. He left soon after, not into the sunset. Speaker of the Parliament, Jacob Mulenda, read his resignation letter.
Of resignation as President of the Republic of Zimbabwe in terms of the provisions of Section 96, Subsection 1 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, Amendment Number 20, 2013. Following my verbal communication with the Speaker of the National Assembly, Advocate Jacob Mulenda, at 13:53 hours, 21st November 2017, intimating my intention to resign as the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, I, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, in terms of Section 96, Subsection 1, of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, hereby formally tender my resignation as the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe with immediate effect.
Even after then, in an interview, Mugabe wanted to be part of the action. Mugabe said that he did not hate his successor, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, but insisted he would not work with him and suggested that his presidency was illegal and unconstitutional. By the way, a constitutional court decision said that there was no coup and it was a military-assisted transition. So the illegality, at least according to the law, was a belief on Mugabe's part. Mugabe would say, and I quote, "People must be chosen in government in a proper way. I'm willing to discuss, willing to assist in the process, but I must be invited." End of quote. Perhaps it was just that, a fighter till the end, that young Mugabe who wanted to win out, have the last word. He wanted agency. He was stubborn and cool the feelings of abandonment he felt when he was a child, you know, by his father when he was young, have had their way. Oh, that might be a stretch, but who knows? In the final installment of this podcast, I summarize his legacy, how I viewed Mugabe as a whole. Maybe not as entirety, but the parts that affected me, for better or for worse. All this and more in the very final installment of Mugabe and Me. The theme song is provided by Alexander Nakarada, and this is a 3 Mob Radio production.